Good to see each of you here tonight. Most of you know that I went on this trip to Cuba with Carrie Keenan, who works with the Temple Terrace Church of Christ, and Victor Castellanos, who is my son-in-law, who is Cuban and translated for us. He is a tremendous help to us in every way. 55 minutes from our pushback at the gate, Tampa International, we arrived at the gate at Jose Marti International Airport in Havana, Cuba. Less than an hour away, but an entire world away. We have quite a story to tell. And I'll just say to you at the beginning, be thankful that you have true freedom of religion where you live. I'm not sure I can tell you this story without getting somewhat emotional. We saw and heard some touching things. So if that happens, just give me a moment to gather myself. It's happened before. I'm my father's child in that regard. My sister is here, and she will vouch for that. He got emotional when he went to Eastern Europe and handed a lady a Bible and tried to tell people about what her wonderful reaction was to that. So we're going to talk about some of the things that we saw. There is the island. We went to Havana. You see over to the east of that, Santa Clara. We also went to the city of Santa Clara. I want you to look further. I'm going to mention at the end of the thing, all the way toward the end of the island, the city of Holguín. Holguín, I'll be mentioning that as we go along. There are some extremely interesting things that we saw. I wish I could tell you more about that. Before I tell you about two churches that we had contact with on our trip, let me tell you some things about Cuba that you'll probably want to know, some of which may also help you understand the situation of Christians in those churches. Some things in Cuba are very expensive. Gasoline is $4 a gallon. A rental car is $150 a day. A nice hotel room is $150 per night. Fortunately, my son-in-law, Victor, found a nice bed and breakfast for the three of us, three bedrooms, three baths, air conditioning, hot water, less than $150 a day for the three of us. So that was a blessing. If we wanted breakfast there, it was complete, toast, ham and eggs, fruit cocktail, juice, coffee con leche, $5. We found many restaurants throughout our stay where we had complete meals, good meals, for $5 each. I saw many people smoking. I wondered how in the world they could afford it. Cigarettes, 25 cents a pack, with taxes, 40 cents. Wages of the average worker are very low, even professional workers. Doctors make $40 a month. Policemen make $40 a month. Nurses make $25 a month. I copied an article you can take. It's on the back there. When you go out, feel free to get one of them, which said on average, Cubans make a little less than $19 a month. Of course, they do get free health care, free education, a minimal amount of food and living expenses subsidized by the government. We were in a place where people were getting these. Victor says the size of a water bottle that you would buy, just a water bottle, they get a size of beans or rice for a month. One of those, if they go and get that. If they have money to buy more, they can buy more there. And we saw that being done while we were there. The average person in Cuba has a very hard time getting by. The people in the churches are mostly in that category. Victor's sister, Gina, she's not a Christian. She lives in the Tampa area. She travels to Cuba about once a month. She has good friends there, Andres and Dia Lima. And Andres drives a cab. Cab drivers do very well. Andres was kind enough to meet us at the airport. He took off 4 days from his work, picked us up at the airport, insisted on driving us anywhere we wanted to go. Other than the pickup at the airport to our rental home, we used him two of those other days. The rest of the time, we caught cabs anywhere from a $5 to $12 cab ride for the three of us. A lot better than paying for a rental car, especially if you got somebody in the cab with you that can speak Spanish, which we did. Victor and our daughter Leslie visited Cuba June of last year for the first time. Victor had the name of several Christians and some who were thought to possibly be Christians. He had phone numbers for them. Gina had a Cuban phone that they could use while they were there. We also used it extensively on our trip. On the trip last June, the government had added a single digit to all of the phone numbers, so Victor could not reach anyone on the number that he tried to call. They got a cab. They went into Old Havana. They started asking the locals if anyone knew where a Church of Christ was meeting. They finally found someone who directed them to a man and his wife who had a church meeting in their home. He knew nothing about these people. The preacher was not on his list of churches, of anybody to contact. He was actually gone when he knocked at the door, and his wife reluctantly opened the door. They visited with her. After Victor and Leslie returned from the trip, he found out that these people were very conservative. No part of the liberal Church of Christ machine that now exists in Cuba, which unfortunately I'm going to tell you about tonight. Before the trip that we just made, Victor reached this man by email, and he said that we were more than welcome to visit and worship with him while we were there. We arrived on Tuesday, early in the day, and once we had settled into our rental home, we took a cab to Old Havana. We had to try to find these people, and let me get to my script here in a minute. It took some looking to find these people. We drove through Havana. That's a picture of that when we were going, and we were asking people and looking. They had been there before. It's very hard to find things. It's better than Costa Rica. Costa Rica has no addresses, no street names. At least we had that. We did find them. There's where they live, that landing that you see up there, the balcony. The church meets in those two open areas behind that. They have a home that is above that area below, and that's where the church meets, and you can see the door down there. And here's Victor standing at the door to their place. When we came to visit them, she would drop a key down in a basket to us. We'd take the key out, open the door, and go up the stairs to where they live. So they told us their story of what they've been through trying to worship God according to the New Testament. The preacher's name there is Amado. His wife's name is Magali. Their last name is Proenza. Wonderful people. I'm going to leave it on this slide for a while. I'm going to do this several times during this tonight when I tell you about certain things or certain people. Amado told us that he began to take an interest in spiritual things just when he had completed the required Cuban military service. He began worshiping with a Nazarene church. He became a member. He developed himself in that faith enough that when the preacher for the group left, he left Amado in charge of the church. But in order for him to do that officially, he had to meet certain criteria of the government and be approved by the man who oversees the government, for the government, all of the churches in Cuba except the Catholics. This man is a preacher in the Church of Christ in Havana. He is supported by the institutional church in the United States in Waco, Texas. He is what I would call a church czar. His name is Angel Emil Perez Diaz. Amado met with him, and he was told that the church that he wanted to form could only be approved under one of three categories: Baptist, Assembly of God, or Church of Christ. He encouraged him to choose the Church of Christ. That's what he was a part of. But he told them that if he did, he would have to give up instrumental music. He apparently taught Amado that instrumental music is not taught in the Bible, because he came to that understanding. And so Amado and the remaining members of that original Nazarene church, there were three others with him, were apparently baptized, and they became members of this Church of Christ at Emil's congregation. The Church of Christ structure under Emil was apparently very authoritarian. And about a month after Amado became a member, he became aware of some preachers whom he now knows were sound in their faith, more conservative than Emil, who had come to Emil and objected that they were being harassed and persecuted by him, and they came to challenge his practices and authority. Amado at that time thought that these men were wrong, and he was defensive of Emil. He continued to worship with Emil's congregation until, by further study and growth, he and the three members who had come from the Nazarene church decided that things were being done that they did not believe were scriptural. They didn't confront Emil directly. They simply asked for and received permission to break away and form a congregation on their own. However, they still had to be under Emil's rule and scrutiny to exist as a congregation. This group, Emil's group, had earlier made it possible for Amado to get some study and training in the Bible through various seminars that he attended. And Emil provided funds for the Proenzas to refurbish this home where they now are, in a shell of a building in which they could live and the church could meet. And as I say, that's still where they live today. There were many rules and regulations that had to be met for them to exist in Cuba as a legal Church of Christ. And you see that Amado has something in his hand there. He's holding in his hand the rules that they had to abide by in order to do that. Amado tried his best to meet these rules and regulations. He had to keep bucking the Tsar about certain things. And the Tsar then began looking for reasons to shut Amado's group down. Emil infiltrated the church with four secret service agents, we would call them CIA people, women, who infiltrated the church and over a period of time came to their services pretending to be interested. They were only there to find things that they might be doing that were against the rules so they could shut them down. Amado told us that one of these women has died. Here's where I'll get emotional. Over all the time, three of the women became Christians. Three of them. One of them is still with them. The other two have moved away to other cities. One has died. After these three women became Christians, the Proenzas asked them, what would they say when they were supposed to report to the government what they found? And they said they just told them that they believed the people in the church were all hypocrites, that they couldn't be as good people as they were pretending to be. Amado told us that the woman who is now with them, before she had become a Christian, became very ill and was admitted to the hospital. Amado and Magali heard about this. They went to see her in the hospital. They prayed for her. She was so moved by that that the first Sunday she was able to attend services, after their visit, she asked to be baptized. We didn't get to meet her the Sunday that we were there because she was working. One of the things she told the Proenzas was that she was instructed to see if they were drinking bottled water. Because if they were, it meant that they were being supported by Americans. Ordinary citizens can't afford bottled water. When the government couldn't find anything through the Secret Service that the church was doing that was against the rules, they then had people begin visiting the neighbors to see if they could get them to say something bad about them. The rules say that the leaders of the church must be of good character. And if they could prove that they were not, they could shut them down. None of the neighbors would say anything bad about them. Amado tried to do everything he could to be legal, to get government approval to exist as a church. If you do not have that approval, you cannot receive financial support, particularly but from a church in America. And so Amado obtained a degree. That one I don't need to be on. There's the degree. He obtained a degree that hangs on the wall where the church meets. He didn't want to do that. But Victor says Amado told him that he must, by law, have that on the wall where the church meets. If the authorities come and do not find it, they can shut the church down. When it was determined that this church was not going to toe the line and be under the control of this Church of Christ czar, Emil sent people to reclaim all of the Bibles and all of the songbooks that they had provided for them when they began meeting. Since then, this group has never been approved. They've been allowed to meet. They've been warned. They're highly scrutinized. They've been told that they cannot go out and teach. They've been told that they cannot exceed 25 members. Amato says he absolutely will not obey that order about the maximum membership allowed. They're just about at that number now, anyway. Victor and Carrie and I saw Jehovah's Witnesses going to people's houses while we were walking one day with literature. So, of course, they have government approval. You've got to have that in order to do that. And we saw a Baptist church having some kind of a meeting of young people one night, very publicly. So we suspect that the rules are firmly pointed at churches of Christ who are not totally under the authority of this church czar. But the church we found in Old Havana has been meeting as an independent church since the fall of 2004. That's posted in their meeting place there, in their living room, as it were, when it's not a meeting place. Amado and Magali received no support from his preaching work. The contribution is only a few dollars a week, probably less than $10. And that is used primarily, if not totally, for benevolence in the congregation. The Proenzas, however, have a daughter who lives in Miami. She won the lottery to get out of Cuba years ago. She's not a member of the church. She's a member of some denomination. But she sends them about $30 to $50 a month. They say that both of them have tried to work jobs at times. But the government, meaning the church czar, would see that they had to do community work on Sundays so that the church couldn't meet. Apparently, most workers, if not all workers in Cuba at certain levels, are assigned work on their block at no pay on the weekends. It's necessary, I'm sure, because the infrastructure is in shambles. Amado is 59 years old. He has recently learned that he has type 2 diabetes. He also has some heart issues. The rules state, those are the rules. He was holding them in his hand. He showed them to us. The rules state that no preacher from America will be allowed to preach in any congregation. Now, you know that's not true where Emil is, but those are the rules. They're allowed to have visitors from America. No one is to preach or teach from America. And so what that probably means is that Emil has to approve anyone who does so. After we met with Amado and Magali on Tuesday, that was the day we got there, we went back the next day. We took them some groceries that we got from a fruit and vegetable cart that was near our bed and breakfast, and we visited with them for another hour and a half. They told us more of their story. The place where they live and where the church meets has no running water. They have a cistern outside a back door of their kitchen, which serves as their only source of water, also serves as their baptistry. To flush the toilet, water must be dumped in the bowl. There is one large room where the church meets, a kitchen, a bathroom, and their bedroom is upstairs. It has crude wooden steps extending up. It's simply a loft. You can see it at the top of the picture there. It looks out on the meeting place, which is essentially their living room when it's not the meeting place. I'm sure it can't be over 8 feet by 10 feet up there, and probably a very low ceiling from what I saw. This is a shot out of the louvered opening there where the church meets, just across the way, 15 or 20 feet over there. This was a picture that I took from that balcony looking down the street, one direction there. We plan to meet with them on Sunday. And Amado asked me to preach, and Carrie to teach the Bible class, and Victor to do the Lord's Supper. We were going to we were going to certainly do that if they asked us to do that. We didn't go there to do that. We said before we went, we're not going to preach. We're going to find out what the situation is. If they asked us to preach, we're going to preach. So that's what we got to do, and I'll tell you about that as we get a little further. At any rate, we told him that we were going to Santa Clara. I pointed that to you on the map, 150 miles to the east, on Friday to see another brother who preached there before we would be back on Sunday. This man's name was Divier Hernandez, and it was a name that was given to us by Gardner Hall, one whom Gardner had had contact with, and he felt sure that this man was quite conservative. Amado said he knew of Divier, but they had never met. And he was concerned that Divier might be trying to get the approval of the czar, as he had, for the group that met there, which he thought would be a mistake. But this was Wednesday when we'd gone back after the first day we got there. On Thursday, Andres picked us up to go to Mariel. Mariel is a city on the coast named for Hemingway's daughter, Mariel Hemingway. He named his daughter, I'm sorry, for that port city that's there. So that's where his friends left. We visited with Mariel's wife's family, whom Victor had met on their previous trip. Before he took us there to the city where they live, he took us to a nearby town to see Victor's uncle, his mother's brother, whom Victor had not seen in 37 years. Very nice people whom we all got to meet, living in some pretty primitive circumstances. They raise a lot of their food there. It's a kind of a complex there. Her sister, this lady's sister, lives there also then. From there, we went on to Mariel and a wonderful meal and visit with Victor's friends for the rest of that day. And then Andres drove us back the hour's drive or so to our rental home. He was to pick us up early the next morning and drive us a 3.5-hour, 150-mile drive to Santa Clara, where Divier Hernandez and his family have a church meeting in their home. Andres was right on time. We drove the distance on a fairly decent, mostly divided highway. I had to get around a few potholes, but for the most part it was pretty good. Saw a lot of interesting things along the way. When we got into Santa Clara, we had real trouble finding the Hernandez house. We must have stopped and asked about a dozen people. This fellow says, no, this way. Somebody else says, no, it's that way. The major problem, I think, was that we had gotten an address from Gardner, but the address was wrong. And fortunately, Victor had the cubophone, and we called Divier several times while we were in the city trying to find them, and we finally found them. Here's his house. That's where the church meets. He has this sign on his front door: Christ alone saves. When he closes that door, it's facing the street. We went in, we were seated, served some sliced pineapples, as Divier began to tell us his story. Divier is 37 years old. That's his family. The older boy was in school, the wife was there. We didn't know while we were talking for an hour and a half, she was fixing a meal in there for us. We couldn't believe it. Divier told us that he had a spiritual interest and awareness from the time he was 8 years old. He can remember that. At some point, he began visiting different churches, never becoming a member of any of them. Seventh-day Adventist first, Baptist next, then the others. And he said he was reading his Bible all of this time, and he'd start with these groups, and he says something's not right. He began to wonder why all these churches existed, because he was reading in his Bible about one church, one body. Why were there so many? And he eventually came into contact with the Church of Christ, and they were teaching what he read in his Bible. But of course, it was Emil's brand of the Church of Christ. He obeyed the gospel because he believed that was true. He developed very quickly. They sent him to many seminars, and he learned quickly there. Divier is well educated. He was a very good athlete. His interest was in the martial arts, second degree black belt in Taekwondo. He also got a degree in sports medicine. Once he became a member of the church, the group there recognized his ability, and they trained him and encouraged him to do personal evangelism. He was very interested in that and very effective at that. And they began to support him full time. He was converting people, helping to form congregations in several smaller towns out of Santa Clara. But he began to see some of the same problems that Amado had seen in Emil's brand of the Church of Christ. And let me just say that there were other factors helping him and also Amado to see what simple New Testament Christianity is. There are two brethren, Anglo-Americans, who have preached and taught in Spanish for many years. One of them is named Bill Reeve. Some of you probably know them or know of them. The other is Wayne Partain. They have translated commentaries and other works which have been used to great profit in Mexico and Latin America and South America, many other places, also in Cuba. Divier got up out of his chair, went in the other room and brought out and gave me this commentary that he had on disc. It was by Bill Reeves, showing us how important that was and how much both Divier and Amado mentioned how they have benefited from the work of these two brethren. And also, many are benefiting from Gardner Hall's Spanish website. Gardner Hall works in New York City, Spanish-speaking congregation. He puts out a paper called Crised, and he also has a website, and many of them got information about some of the practices that they saw were not scriptural off of this website. And he sends this paper out to many countries with great teaching material. But Divier saw problems with the way things were being done. And I'm not sure whether he confronted Emil directly or just asked a bunch of questions in some way indicated his displeasure or skepticism. But however it was, the official Church of Christ in Cuba knew that he had some qualms about this. They suspected that he was about to exit, and they were supporting him financially, and they didn't want to lose him. His contributions to that group were immense. Not only evangelizing and beginning churches, but training others to do the same. And one day he received an order from Emil to come to Havana and meet with him. One of the things I'd like to talk about and show you, but I don't have time, is we saw dump truck after dump truck of that type, not necessarily with people standing in it, moving on the highway from one place to another. DBR told us if he wanted to go to Havana, it would take him 3 months to get a place to go in that sort of a circumstance. It's a long journey from Santa Clara to Havana. And he told us that he went to Havana, and Emil locked him up in his office, just the two of them, and put a blank sheet of paper in front of him and handed him a pen and said, "I know how much you make because I pay you. Write down the amount you want up to five times what you're getting now, and it's yours, if you'll continue to do what you've been doing." Divier said he pushed the paper back and said something like, "You're mistaken about me. I'll not do it. But I will continue to do this on my own, whether I'm supported or not." And so he broke away from any association with them. He said later he had a group of One Cup brethren contact him, asking him to come work with them in evangelization. This was a group that also had been marked by Emil. And they actually sent him some money, saying that they'd been blessed and they wanted him to have this. He said he took the first money, but later he told them not to send him any more money. He didn't want to be involved with them. Divier has preached for the church that meets in his home since 2009, supporting himself as best he can. His training in sports medicine allowed him to work with Cuban athletes, apparently with the government-supported athletes. But he discontinued that because they would ask him to lie about the condition of the athletes. He told him, "I can't sign off on that. Before I'm a sports medicine guy, I'm a Christian." And they said to him, "Well, you're in the wrong business if you're not willing to not tell the truth." And so he quit that. Since then, he's been freelancing his sports medicine work with just a few private athletes, not near enough to adequately support his family. His wife, I think her name is Yannette. I didn't write it down. I think that's what I remember. His wife had a very good job, but she had a serious health issue, had to have a blood transfusion, and from that transfusion contracted lupus. She is working again, but not nearly at the salary that she had before. Divier told us that he's grateful that he at least has been able to use his sports medicine training to help some in the congregation. Two of their members are bedridden, one with a brain aneurysm, the other from a stroke. And so he visits them regularly, gives them massages to help them feel better and stay healthier. He showed us a picture of a woman's house in the congregation. I can't show you the house because I don't have a picture of that. A woman's house in the congregation, her house had, I think, just a few days before we came, her house had just completely collapsed, all of a sudden collapsed. Somewhere in the conversation, he told us that the total weekly contribution of that group on average is about $3. And like the group in Old Havana, all of it goes to help those who are most needy in the congregation. It reminds you of those early disciples in Jerusalem, those who had provided for those who did not. Divier told us that he's being watched very closely. He must be very, very careful in what he does in the church. We were there on a Friday. He said that during the week we were okay to go and visit with him. But if we were to worship them on Sunday, it would be a huge red flag. He says they're being targeted by Emil's people, and they're looking for ways to shut them down. When you go to Cuba, you must have a visa. You have to state the purpose of your visit. There are 12 categories from which you can choose. One of those is religious. We were warned by people who have been not to choose that. If we did, it would go directly to, we didn't know who Emil was till we went, but it would have gone directly to his office and certainly would have been denied. We could have simply put tourist, as the brethren do who go to India. We put visiting family and friends, since we were going to see Victor's uncle while we were there. But Divier told us that if we had stayed in any hotel there in Santa Clara, Emil would know about it. Americans must fill out an extra paper at the hotel. It goes to Emil, and he checks us out to see what we're there to do. The group in Santa Clara is about 15 to 20 people. He sent us this picture after we left over there. We, of course, didn't worship with them, but he said he would send us a picture, and he did. About 15 to 20. They have been larger in the past, but from that group, two other groups have begun in towns about 20 to 30 miles away. One has about 10 to 12 in it. The other has 5 to 6 in it. And these may well have been formed because the group in Divier's home was outgrowing their small space. But we found Divier to be very intelligent, very zealous, and of course very adept at evangelization. And he told us that he's meeting with the leaders of those two small groups on Saturdays to encourage and train those men in their work. When we asked him what we could do to help, he answered that our visit alone was all that he could ask for, that it was such an encouragement to him. Nevertheless, we insisted that he take some money to help his family and to help some of those in the congregation. I had money that some had given me to help in any way, which we asked him to give to the sister whose house had collapsed. And this is a picture that he sent of her since we have returned also. So Victor and Carrie and I talked on the way back to Havana about what we can do to help. And we agreed that it would be so beneficial to Amado and Divier if they could meet together and talk. They both knew of each other. They have never met or conversed. Amado probably can't travel. Divier, I'm sure, can. So we'll try to figure out a way to get Divier to Havana. This time not to meet with the Pope of the so-called Church of Christ, but with a true fellow servant of the Lord. And we might even, on our next trip, get Divier to Havana while we're there and bring both of them to our rented home where they will be free to talk. And I know they would enjoy that. We were back to our bed and breakfast on Friday night. These are pictures from where we stayed, the steps going up. I would sit on the porch out there early in the morning, and the guys would come out. I think I was the first one up every morning. I said, I'm watching Cuba go by. I mean, it was a sight. The loud trucks, the diesel, the fumes, all of it. It was quite a thing to see. There's where our little breakfast nook was right in there. To the right of that was the door that goes in. There's the door there that went back to the two bedrooms, the one where Carrie was, the one where I was. Victor was down the steps just a little in that other one. Saturday was a leisurely day, and we decided to call Amado and Magali and take them to a restaurant for lunch. I'm sure that they had not eaten out at a restaurant in years. They're standing here. We had a long line. We were waiting in. They sat on a bench for a while, and then they came. We're about ready to go in. And we had a nice meal and visit with them, even though it was so dark in there. Victor turned the light on his phone. We had a nice meal and visit, even though some of the patrons were pretty rowdy while we were in there. It was hard for us to converse. On Sunday, we got to worship with brethren in Old Havana. Thought I put something down here. I did. We had been warned by a man from Mexico who had been there to preach, don't carry your Bibles where they can see you in public. Don't take Bibles where they can see you. We didn't know what to do. Victor had his on his phone. Carrie had his in his satchel that he carries, his shoulder strap. And so I made the best use I've ever made of a Walmart bag. Yep, I carried that to service. A Walmart bag. It worked really well. We were just a little unsure what we could do. I mean, Americans on Sunday carrying Bibles, going to places, I forgot to tell you, the folks that don't know Carrie, he was a pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates organization and the Texas Rangers organization. He's 6'9" tall, white hair. You think that doesn't attract a little attention when we go there? It does. So we weren't sure just what to do. Everything was fine. Amado had told us that we needed to keep the service to an hour and a half. That's the, you might have seen that table when I showed you that loft upstairs. It's the communion table on Sunday. There's the two boards that are there. Carrie put his notes on one. I'll show you the other one a little closer in a minute. There it is. That's the order of services. In the Clase Dominical, Carrie Keenan. And the Mensaje, I believe it is Brent Lewis. And the Ofrendas, Victor Castellanos. Those were the parts we were going to. They put that on the board every time. They change the names. Everything else stays the same. But they change the names of the people who are helping there. So Amada told us that we needed to keep the service, I'll talk about that in a minute, to an hour and a half. They are not allowed to meet midweek. They're allowed to meet one time on Sunday. They try to limit that to the hour and a half. They do things a little differently. Three song leaders at a time. Or five song leaders at a time. So Carrie taught the Bible class. And I preached the sermon, and Victor did it all. He not only translated for both of us, but he conducted the Lord's Supper. And in all of it, I think we were 5 minutes over. Amada said, no problem. We're okay. I was seated right next to this young lady. I'm using this picture for a couple of reasons. Her name was Giselle. Her husband's name is Isaac. Isaac is the preacher's son, their youngest child. He is 17 years old. She is 16 years old. They've been married for a year and a half. And when they worship, the louvered shutters or doors are wide open. The neighbors all around can hear them singing. Their singing was different. No songs that we recognized, I'll come to that in a minute. I didn't recognize a single song, very zealously sung. After the end of the sermon and the Lord's Supper following, there was a reading and a response from the congregation. The man would read, the congregation would respond. They had a reading that they responded. Never seen that before. And I'll tell you about the final prayer we had that morning. Of course, these chairs are just plastic chairs that are stacked, and then they're stacked up in one place. They moved the chairs out of the way. They had us all stand in a circle and hold hands. And one brother led the prayer. And when he got to the end of the prayer, he came to a crescendo. His voice started getting louder and louder, kind of like our song that we sing, Low in the Grave He Lay, and then when we get to the chorus, Up from the Grave He Rose. Well, that's the way he spoke. And when he got to the last, he raised his voice, and everybody at the end said, Amen! I'm telling you, folks, you could have heard it three blocks away. I mean, you could have heard it. So that was kind of interesting. At the end, I told him at the end of the sermon that this was a day that the three of us would remember for the rest of our lives. Being able to teach and preach in Cuba. And I saw Amado point to himself when I said that and nod his head. Later he told us that this was a day that he too would remember because it was the first time that any Americans had ever preached or taught there. They wanted us to eat with them afterwards. We couldn't do it. You just have to be careful about what you eat there. There's the group. And so we bid goodbye to the brethren, but we arranged with Amado to come back on Monday on our way to the airport. When we got there on Monday, we told him about our visit with Divier. His mouth dropped open when we told him about that meeting of Divier years ago with Emil and what he had urged him to do in order to guarantee a higher salary from him. He'd never heard about that, but he knew that was exactly how he does things. And so Amado began showing us documents that he had kept, showing further how Angel Emil Perez Diaz operates. As we said, Emil Perez holds two roles. He is the preacher for the Church of Christ in Havana, and he is supported by an institutional church in the United States, and he is the government man, the man in the government, who regulates all churches in Cuba except the Catholic Church. Amado showed us a document from 2006 that showed that Emil's church in that year had 179 members. Emil said he believes the number is over 300 now. He said that Emil was an accountant before becoming a Christian, and he was a whiz with numbers, and he believed that the government recognized the value that that could be to them. And in that way, he was able to obtain his position. So Victor took a picture of all of these documents. I'm going to tell you what some of them said. He took pictures. They wanted us to copy them. I said, no, let's take a picture of them. Maybe Victor did. Let's take a picture of them. Let's not copy them. There's a letter showing that some of the preachers in outlying places came to Havana and before Emil's congregation brought charges against him. And he forced them to all write letters of repentance for their actions. He is second in the government, highest, over the churches. There's only one person who is superior to Emil in the government, and her name is Caridad Diego Bello. I Googled her name last night. I found out her title. I had to translate it out of the Spanish. Google Translate works. Head of the Office of Attention to Religious Affairs. That is her title. She has access to Raul Castro. Not only that, but when I did that, I found her at a table with Raul Castro and looked like a couple of Catholic priests across the table from them there. He told us about this woman. And he showed us a letter written by Emil to his superior, this woman, petitioning for the right to have any funds sent from outside the country to help churches in Cuba be sent only to him. And he would distribute them as he saw fit. There is one letter written on the Church of Christ letterhead that has him as the preacher. There's another letter on the same letterhead that has him identified as the president of the church, with two vice presidents and other officers listed on the letterhead. There's a document that gives him a title that was a little hard for Victor to translate exactly, but it's something close to this: direct president of the Joint National Churches of Christ in Cuba. So he is the president of the church that he preaches for, and the other appears to be his government title. This man has complete control over the churches of Christ that meet in Cuba. But we know now of at least these two congregations that we came in contact with, and two others near Santa Clara who've broken that connection. And there are others. One in particular I'll mention just here at the end in a minute. Amada showed us more documents. One of them showed that Emil required the preachers in other areas to send him a report, either weekly or monthly, of their attendance and contribution. And as he was looking at the letter, he said the word contribution is in bold letters, and it's the only bold letter on the page. They were required to meet with him monthly. There's a document that tells of 10 preachers who met with him and one more who did not come. The one who was not at the meeting was sternly reminded that he needed to come the next month and bring the report from the month that he did not come. So we feel that our first trip, this was very successful because, folks, we got the lay of the land. We kind of know what's going on now. And next time we're hoping to go further east on the island to Granma Province, which is out way out close to Guantanamo. That's where the city of Holguin is that I told you to keep in your head there. Gardner Hall is certain that the preacher and his group there are completely autonomous. His name is Pedro Menarda. He's another preacher who bucked Emil's power structure. And the group there was growing quickly. In fact, they grew to around 200 or more. And they met in their own building. But this man went against Emil publicly, and the authorities completely shut them down. There's still a small group there meeting in a home. Victor has contacted them. They very much want us to come. He keeps in touch with Pedro's daughter. Her name is Dorelis, on a monthly basis. And so we can fly into Holguin, the capital city of Granma Province, in order to visit with them. Well, it was quite an encouraging trip. Discouraging from the circumstances that those brethren are under, but encouraging that they are absolutely determined to serve the Lord strictly according to the New Testament. We didn't take Bibles with us to leave with them. We didn't know whether we could. We had conflicted information about that. We know now that we can. Maybe a few in each suitcase. They need Bibles. They told us that. They wished we'd brought some. They need clothes. We'll probably take some clothes and even pay for an extra bag to take clothes along. They can use clothes of any kind. These pictures are hanging on the wall in their building. It's pictures of people that they baptized in that tank that I showed you a while ago. And these are the pictures of the leadership in the congregation that is there. There was a poignant moment before we left Monday to go on to the airport. Amado said to us, "Do you have a map of the United States?" None of us did. He said, "I'd sure like to have a map of the United States. I don't know where anything is." And he said, "You can't buy them in the stores because it's against the law to sell one here in the stores. We'll get him a map." Let me pass along one request that he made, and that is that no one put anything about this visit we made on social media of any kind. It could cause him real problems. He, along with others, is dedicated to preaching the pure gospel of Christ. And so I'll close with a scripture that he has posted at the bottom of that order of service board that's filled out each Lord's Day with the people who participate. It's Colossians 4 and verse 17. It's in the blue right there at the bottom of that. And it says this: "Take heed to the ministry which you have received in the Lord." And I believe that he and many others are doing just that. People in Cuba need the gospel because the whole world needs the gospel. If you're a human, You need the gospel. The gospel is good news. That man can be saved from his sins and made right before the God who made him. And like De Vere's sign on the front door says, only Christ saves. There may be one here tonight who needs to come to Christ for salvation and is ready to do so by believing who God is, who Jesus is, God's Son, by repenting of your sins, confessing His name as Lord, and then being baptized to have your sins washed away. And if you should be ready tonight to do that, we're ready to help. So please come while we stand and sing.
While we pray and